Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report's weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. I'm your host, Vago Maradian, and joining us today is Chris Inglis, a retired United States Air Force Brigadier General who served as the Deputy Director of the National Security Agency. He's a member of the Cyberspace Solarium Commission and is now the Robert and Mary M. Looker Professor of Cybersecurity Studies at the United States Naval Academy, which has a brand new cyber building. Chris, thanks very much for joining us.
That's my pleasure. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
And congratulations on the new facility, and we look forward to hearing about it a little bit later in the segment. It is Cybersecurity Awareness Month this month, and there was a landmark agreement between the National Security Agency and the Defense Department to build a more diverse cybersecurity workforce. The initiative is led by Diane Janicek, National Security Agency's Chief Learning Officer, is one of the key people in it. Shannon Jackson of the Pentagon's Office of Small Business Programs both had an online event to roll the initiative out that seeks to engage historically Black colleges and universities, as well as minority-serving institutions. And joining Janssen and Jackson at the rollout were Armando CA of the Maryland Innovation and Cybersecurity Institute, or MISI, Dr. Amelia Estwick, the director of the National Cybersecurity Institute at Excelsior College, and Dr. Thayer Hayajne, the director of the Fordham Center for Cybersecurity at Fordham University. We're all at the event. Talk to us about this drive for diversity in the cyber and cybersecurity workforce. I think there's a national recognition to address racism, social injustice, the likes of which we haven't seen in decades, and also to try to seek equal opportunity and greater diversity. And if you look at it, it was a lot like a cyber submarine or a friend of mine. When women were coming into the submarine force, he thought it was terrific because it extends the talent pool to 50% of the population that was not available. And at a time when we have such a shortage of talent, both on government and industry side, right? Our sponsor, Northrop Grumman, is looking to recruit aggressively to fill the large number of outstanding jobs it's got. Does cybersecurity and the cyber community have a diversity problem? And why is it so important to address it?
Yeah, so thanks very much for the question. It's a great question and very appropriate to discuss this in Cyber Month, because cyber, I think we all realize, is increasingly less about the technology and more about the intellect and the intellectual capital we can bring to bear. I think we do have a diversity problem in cyber, and I would characterize that in three ways. One, we certainly don't have enough people on the problem, and when you look at how much talent is necessary, whether the word cyber is in the job or whether you simply have to have a better understanding of what cyber is and why it means something to you, whatever your trade might be, we need more people on the problem, which means we need to reach out to a broader segment of the population. My view is that everyone needs to know more about cyber than they do today. And if you then look at the distinct populations that you might characterize based upon demographics, I think by one study I saw that 20% of the cybersecurity workforce is comprised of women. Just imagine the untapped potential if you then kind of increased that participation rate. People of color, it's fewer. So the numbers alone would argue that we have a problem. Two, cyber, if there's any function in our society that is diverse in the application of disciplines that are required, it's cyber. It's not just the technologists, or for that matter, not just the people who manage and operate digital infrastructure. Everyone has a role. Anyone might find themselves on the front line of some particular cyber threat, be in a place to either prevent it or to exacerbate it. And so we have to make sure that we treat neurodiversity as seriously as we perhaps treat the tangible diversity that we can measure in a quantitative measure. So we need left brain thinkers, right brain thinkers, we need political scientists, cultural specialists, technologists. We need them all to understand something more about our dependence upon digital infrastructure. At the Naval Academy, I know we'll talk about that more in a minute, we talk about cyber operations not as being operations that involve cyber as the main play, but rather a world where operations of any kind are increasingly dependent upon cyber. If that's the truth, and I believe it is, then neurodiversity is essential. The last kind of diversity that I would say that we need to try to work our way through is the diversity of the roles, authorities, disciplines that we bring to bear to solve any particular cyber problem. The Solarium Commission that I had the privilege of serving on over the last year and a half, if you were to characterize its bottom line recommendation in a phrase, it would be that from this day forward, we propose that if you're an adversary in cyberspace, you need to beat all of us to beat one of us. By that, I mean that we can no longer afford to defend our various patches or territory alone in silos. We need to essentially join up and truly collaborate and integrate. That's a diversity issue. How do you take advantage of all the strength that you might have? So the question you've asked was occasioned by the initiative, I think it's called the Cyber Education Diversity Initiative, which tries to then take on a slice of this problem by saying, how do we marry educational opportunities with cyber expertise that is born of real experience with some problem set that really needs that as a way to take greater advantage of untapped potential across not simply tangibly measurable diversity, but neurodiversity and across the different roles, right, that society might bring to bear. For my money, there's no greater or more important topic to talk about than how do we harness that intellectual capital.
You're an operator and also, or were an operator, but now you're an educator. Is this the right approach to try to do that? And what is the best approach in order to do this? Because it's a very interdisciplinary problem, right? And you're also, like the sciences, trying to get people excited in this. So what's the right approach?
I think this is a right approach. There are perhaps others, but this one I would commend for the following reasons, which is that just like the Solarium Commission and any number of other studies kind of observed, we don't have enough people on the problem. That's a slightly different characterization than saying we don't have enough people who are aware of cyber techniques or kind of cyber issues. It's a slightly different problem than saying that we don't have enough people who've actually got a cyber degree or a cyber certification. What it says is we don't have enough people who actually have their hands on and are solving cyber problems. And if that's the problem, if that's what you want to take on, then you have to marry cyber education, which is how do you either train or educate, two different things, but how do you either train or educate people to understand, you know, what the techniques, the protocols, the expertise might be? How do you then give them real hands-on experience? How do you actually kind of lay them kind of on something that's worth solving? And that third part then kind of says, and what problems would you make some kind of difference to? This initiative that you began the session describing, the Cyber Education Diversity Initiative, essentially takes the educational concepts that have been well-defined in places like the cyber or the Centers for Academic Excellence, but other places have defined the curricular elements, marries that up with programs who deliver that to real students, right? So that you actually are kind of beginning to convey that in and through kind of the minds of the students, and then marries it to institutions who perhaps have not been properly represented or fully represented, right, you know, in developing that talent, and then finally delivers it to problems of consequence, these small businesses who are out there trying to actually deliver functions that are dependent upon digital infrastructure, or they're part of the supply chain to create the systems that help us create resilience or defend systems of interest. In my view, it's the trifecta of how do you put the curriculum, the programs, and the problems together in the same package so that you're not just saying, I have the potential because I have a greater and trained workforce, I'm actually delivering. That's what I think is most commendable about this particular initiative.
Is cyber like science and engineering or math, for example, where you've got to draw kids in very, very early and keep their interest in it so that they end up going into the field? Or is cyber different in terms of attracting even maybe a little bit later in life, right? I mean, talking in their 20s or even their 30s, 40s, to cyber roles, bringing their life experiences with them. And what's the right way to try to do this as we're trying to find people, again, with those sort of diversity of experience base, and skill sets to go into cyber careers?
It's a great question. I think that there are some distinct similarities between cyber and the engineering fields in terms of the penalty that is borne for not getting in early enough, that you have the technical underpinnings, the technical foundation. But cyber is also something you can join late. So let me explain each of those. Right. In the math and sciences, if you haven't taken the foundational elements, often in K through 12, kind of in your first year of college, if you go that far, you pay a penalty as a junior or senior in a college program, or you frankly simply cannot get a Bachelor of Science in whatever it is you're pursuing. And so early introduction, early experience is essential to then kind of, learning the discipline at a higher level. In cyber, if you're going to be the person who actually is doing the hands-on keyboard work, that is also true. And so an early introduction, early grounding, early foundations, really important. But cyber is a multidisciplinary experience. And so we need in the cyber realm to make sure that the technology is fit for purpose, that the people are fit for purpose, and that the doctrine, the assignment of roles and responsibilities are also fit for purpose. So we need all the disciplines available to us. And in that regard, people can join and make significant contributions to the cyber, the cybersecurity activities. They can join late in cyber because while they may not know it, they've been training all their lives to bring their discipline to bear on that. I'll just close by saying one thing further, which is where there are distinct similarities between the challenges we have in developing engineering workforces or cyber workforces, is we too often have the tendency to turn students off early in their experience of the opportunities that might be available to them. And once you turn them off, it's really hard to turn them back on. I can still recall with some dissatisfaction, a fourth or fifth grade science teacher telling one of my children, because you're of a particular sex, you must not be good at this, and therefore you should set your expectations accordingly. Whether or not that biases the particular kind of student, the particular kind of person who that's addressed to, we do too much of that, right? And we shouldn't therefore kind of turn people off, but rather we should kind of do just the opposite, which is to set the table, set the kind of the bountiful table for them and expose them to all of this so that they can get excited and stay excited from the earliest possible moment.
How much is the security clearance process a problem here in this? Because I find that there is such a backlog. It's so meticulous. I understand that we're trying to avoid the Snowdens and the Chelsea Mannings and whoever. But at the same time, you have people who are in the community who've got to step out and get stalled for a while until their renewals are done. Is there a better way to try to do this, given that so much of what is involved in cyber requires people to have clearances?
There is a problem in the clearance process, and I think it's a well-recognized one. And frankly, there are some very thoughtful, talented people who are taking that on within the Department of Defense, the intelligence community, and other quarters. But the problem is so deep, so challenging that we've not cracked the nut, I think, to the degree necessary. I would say my characterization would be we have three problems. One, I think that we've overstated who needs a clearance or the level at which you need to have a clearance to do kind of work that requires some degree of discretion. Not everyone needs a top secret compartmented intelligence clearance to do secret level or confidential or simply proprietary work. And so we need to revisit who actually needs the clearance in the first place. We also need to revisit, how do we put various organizations together who would combine the different authorities or the different kind of special data sets that they have access to. But my sense is that we often, when we think about combining two different work groups, we think about how do we do that at the highest possible level. Therefore, we have to clear one side for perhaps classified information, the other side for access to proprietary information, thinking of public-private partnerships. I would do just the opposite, which is how do you connect them at an unclassified level? There's a rich degree of collaboration that could occur there, which then informs what happens in the stovepipe without having to actually make everyone in one stovepipe clear for the other. So you got to solve that problem. The second problem that we have is once we have determined who should have a clearance at what level, hopefully a smaller set than we kind of think of today, it takes too much time to get to the place where you say, I'm ready now to give you the clearance. So we're in a competition for talent. the private sector and other purposes that don't require clearances are competing for that same talent. And we therefore need, when we identify that talent and say, I want you kind of to apply that talent to this, we need to move them as quickly as possible to kind of that. That's not to say we should be reckless or perhaps indiscriminate about granting the authority to access data sets, but there are very effective ways to make that more quick and to then sustain that over time by understanding something not about your trustworthiness coming in based upon historical elements, but rather about your continued demonstration of trustworthiness based upon, you know, what you do with that in real time. And that then leads me to the third thing, which is that if you can solve the time, you know, the time to, you know, get somebody on a problem, how do you then sustain that? And can you achieve some degree of agility and reciprocity within that? So say somebody that works within the U.S. intelligence community that goes to the private sector, there ought to be a consideration of maybe we sustain or at least put in a kind of not a cold state, but a warm state, that clearance, such that if we ever need to turn that back on again, maybe for a public-private kind of exchange, that's easily done. When somebody moves from one agency within the national security establishment to another, that there's explicit, transparent reciprocity. They don't need to restart that process because if collaboration and integration are the watchword of how we're actually going to approach cybersecurity in the future, the clearances, right, the kind of the way that we allow people to move across those boundaries needs to match that. I think we take those three problems on, and thoughtful organizations are, that we'll be in a much better place and we'll actually be able to scale this in the way that we must.
And very, very quickly, Naval Academy has a new building. You're in 4 short years. Cyber is what now the third most popular of 25 majors at the Naval Academy. Talk to us a little bit about the building and what's so amazing about it.
Yep, we have a brand new building, first academic building on the Naval Academy campus in something like 40 years, occupies the last buildable site on the campus, and it is the cybersecurity building. More importantly, it's the Grace Hopper Cybersecurity Building, named in honor of a Navy admiral who kind of spent most of her career kind of innovating, creating computers that made a difference, not just in the private sector, but in the United States Navy as well. And so, you know, it's a high honor to have that name on this building. The building itself is designed fit for purpose to essentially host all the disciplines required to kind of effect good cybersecurity in this day and age. It has things from drone labs that both kind of have sea tanks where you can do submersibles or kind of vessels afloat, to flying kind of the vehicles that we know as airborne drones inside the building under controlled circumstances. It has a secure facility in it where we can have classified conversations. That's for the operational development, the professional development of the midshipmen who will soon lead kind of the Navy and the Marine Corps in harm's way. And then finally, you know, it's got, you know, all of the departments. So there's a cyber science department, there's a computer science department, there's an electrical engineering department, and a few others that essentially bring those multiple disciplines to bear. There is a program at the Naval Academy that ensures every student gets 2 core courses, no matter what their major is, in cyber. And then for the relative few, kind of third most popular major on the campus, there's a very detailed program from the second year through the fourth that would kind of give them all that they need to master the technology, the human factors, the doctrine, the law, the ethics required to do cyber. The building is a green field on which that takes place. And as proud as we are of the building, we're more proud still of the substance that takes place inside of that, and grateful to the Congress, the executive branch that has gifted us with this. Now it's our job to make good use of it.
Sir, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it as always. All the best. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Take care. Good luck to us. Bye.